Track 2. Hello and welcome to the news recorded on Wednesday, the 16th of August 2017. I'm Sue.
I'm Beth.
And I'm Margaret.
And your sound engineer this week is John. We'd like to say a very big thank you to Joan Simmons, who's kindly sent us a donation towards the funding of our Talking News and Magazine. So once again, Joan, we're very grateful. Thank you. And now, Beth, we'll start us off with the news.
Fire crews at two Black Country stations were sent to deal with more than 2,000 elderly falls in a year, twice the amount of actual fire responses, said West Midlands Fire Service headquarters in Birmingham. The crews at Wolverhampton and Fallings Park were the busiest across the West Midlands in 2016-17, but out of the 2,156 responses at Wolverhampton, just 439 were for actual fires, 1,116 were for falls, and at Fallings Park, out of 2,155 responses, crews attended 553 actual fires plus 1,003 falls. The change in role for the firefighters is down to a Wolverhampton Council contract won by West Midlands Fire Service called Telecare. It sees a call centre call on the trauma-trained firefighters to help with a fall where the independent living person is not injured. On winning the contract last year, Phil Loach, Chief Fire Officer for West Midlands Fire Service, said it was a fantastic opportunity to help the most vulnerable members of our community. Wolverhampton Watch Commander David Nail said, "Our role has changed. We have always been first aid trained, but now we are going out more on responses to falls. We used the skills before at fires and road traffic collisions. Now we are using it in elderly people's homes." Mr. Nail said it was adding strain on the station, which had taken no extra resources on as a result. The figures, which came from a Freedom of Information Act request, showed the crew in Wolverhampton was called to 439 fires, 196 special service calls, which include road crash, and 405 false alarms. At Fallings Park, crews attended 553 fires out of the 2,155 call-outs and 412 false alarms. For West Bromwich's crews, they attended 814 actual fires out of the 1,879 call-outs. These also included 78 falls and 663 false alarms. The crews attended the most special service call-outs in the West Midlands, 324. Dudley, Walsall and Haydon Cross were also busy during the financial period, receiving 1,087, 1,055 and 866 call-outs respectively, but between them they attended 810 fires.
One man was arrested as protesters clashed in Wolverhampton city centre during a Britain First demonstration on Saturday last. Tempers flared and eggs were thrown from the roof of a shopping centre as dozens of police officers formed lines to keep the far-right group away from up to 100 anti-fascist demonstrators. Chants of "Britain First, we're fighting back" were met with a chorus of "Whose streets, our streets" by the placards carrying protesters. As shoppers watched in bewilderment, part of Dudley Street was cordoned off to the public during the height of the trouble. Around 20 far-right Britain First supporters from around the Midlands and the South were in the city to hold a recruitment drive, but met with angry oppositions from members of the Wolverhampton and Bilston Trade Union Council, united against fascism and socialist worker groups. There were heated exchanges and shouts of "scum" and "you're not welcome" aimed at the group, who took video footage of the protesters and photographs of each other while fenced in by the police. More than 50 police and community support officers with dogs flooded the city centre to prevent an outbreak of violence. Section 14 of the Public Order Act 1986 notices were served on both sets of protesters, instructing them where to protest in order to keep the group separate, and one man was arrested. Anthony Walker, aged 50, from Gerald Road, Salford, was detained and charged with using threatening or abusive words or behaviour, with intent to cause fear or provoke unlawful violence, and bailed to appear at Walsall Magistrate Court on August the 25th. There was an allegation that a corrosive substance was hurled at the Britain First demonstrators. But no injuries were reported and the suspect managed to escape police. Chief Superintendent Dave Sturman from West Midlands Police Operations Department said, "The right to demonstrate is a fundamental human right, but we have a duty to facilitate peaceful protests. However, we had not been given prior notice of today's event, leaving little time to prepare. However, our policing response was swift and robust, ensuring that confrontation was kept to a minimum and the city of Wolverhampton returned to normality as soon as possible."
A cancer survivor who has had a bench dedicated to her is too upset to comment after it was badly vandalised. Sally Cooper from Walsall was 8 years in remission in 2014 after being diagnosed with cervical cancer when Cancer Research UK placed a bench in her honour at Bloxwich Park. This week the bench has been severely damaged with only the back and left side of it still standing. The bench, which reads "Sally Cooper loved sitting here and still does, thanks to everyone who stands up to cancer," represents a difficult time in her life when she was recovering from cancer at a time when her son Martin was diagnosed with testicular cancer and later her mother Kathleen Vernon was diagnosed with womb cancer and subsequently died in 2010. Normally, inscribed benches commemorate those who died, but Sally lived on to see it, which is not as positive as it initially seems after vandals completely destroyed it. It was placed there as one of a series of benches being put around the UK as part of a Cancer Research UK's Stand Up to Cancer campaign and was one of her favourite spots where she would walk with her dog and look at the flowers, which she would admire when times were hard. Mark Holden, head of Clean and Green at Walsall Council, said, "I'm appalled to see that a special bench in Bloxwich Park has been so badly vandalised. The bench was commissioned by Cancer Research UK in 2014 and dedicated to a local lady, Sally Cooper. It is disrespectful that this beautiful bench has been so mindlessly targeted in this way." The damaged bench has since been collected and the commissioner of the bench, which is Cancer Research UK, has been contacted to see how they wish to proceed. Now, anyone with any information has been urged to inform the police on 101. Along with any other antisocial behaviour in the borough.
An alleged murder victim could have killed herself, a pathologist has told Wolverhampton Crown Court. Tina Billingham was stabbed through the heart and liver with a sword stick while in a van with her partner Ronald Cook and was certified dead soon afterwards, the jury heard. He drove the gravely injured 54-year-old to her doctor's surgery at Rowley Healthcare in Hawsley in Rowley Regis and told staff the wounds were self-inflicted. Prosecutor Miss Rachel Brand QC maintained this was a lie and as she lay dying he was hoping to escape the consequences of what he had done. Dr Nicholas Hunt, who carried out a post-mortem examination of the deceased, said the pathological facts of the case did not allow him to rule out the injuries being caused by the victim. He agreed when Mr Jonas Hankin, QC defending, suggested this was a realistic possibility. Dr Hunt added it was also possible she was stabbed by somebody else and denied her absence of defence injuries made it more likely the fatal blows were delivered by Miss Billingham. Neither would have been immediately fatal or sufficiently debilitating to prevent both being self-inflicted, the jury heard. Mr Hankin said the victim, who had lived with Cook at Granville Road in Old Hill for around 15 years, had a long history of depression and had taken an overdose 3 times in the past. He alleged this woman had attempted to take her own life on more than one occasion. Cook, said to have a fascination with bladed articles, kept a sword stick in his van and admitted the couple had argued the day she died. He claimed to have put the weapon on a seat of the van and said, "Go on then," after she announced, "If I had a knife, I would kill myself." The defendant alleged she stabbed herself before he could stop her. Members of Miss Billingham's family claimed he was short-tempered, controlling, and had allegedly left her battered and bruised on more than one occasion. It was said she had a lot to look forward to when tragedy struck on February the 6th. Her sister Mandy Collins told the court there was no hint of her harming herself. She wouldn't have done that. Cook denies murdering his partner and the trial continues.
Artist Carlos Bogostoff is bringing a touch of glass to the musical world as he bangs out a tune on one of his one-of-a-kind piano. His crystal-clear creation was painstakingly made from old window panes and will be one of the highlights at this year's International Festival of Glass in Stourbridge. The Latvian-born skateboarder, who has been making waves in the art world thanks to his sparkly instrument, is even inviting visitors to have a go at playing a song. The masterpiece, which has been previously displayed in the Canary Wharf in London in 2015, involved more than 4 months of work cutting the glass into pieces and gluing each layer together. Speaking about his work, he has said, "Music is one of the greatest sources of inspiration for me. Piano music especially has such great strength. I try to make beautiful things with care and patience, because from my point of view, patience is something we lack these days. My goal is to slow down a person in a rush and give them a sense of wonder," he added. Carlos, who graduated in glass art in Art Academy of Latvia, is also a keen skateboarder and uses his skills to make glass ramps to help him perform his tricks. He describes skateboarding as being alive and elusive like glass, adding, "Skateboarders riding through the glass creates an intense image for the viewer. But the glass shape, shining in the rays of light, recalls its unfathomable beauty, fragility and strength at the same time." Festival director Janine Christley said, "We are really excited to have Carlos at this year's festival. He will be making one of his glass skateboard ramps and giving demonstrations throughout the weekend. Known for their daring feats, acrobats, dancing and illusions, Circus Raj are described as the perfect entertainment for the whole family to enjoy. There will be thrilling for the audience at the Glasshouse Art College at 7 p.m. on August the 28th. A mini film festival featuring movies old and new from around the world, with glass as the constant theme, will take place at the Ruskin Glass Centre throughout the event from August the 25th to the 28th. There'll also be jazz at the Rose and Crown from 9 p.m. on August the 25th. While the Crick Crack Club will be bringing their performance, Storytelling, to the Ruskin Glass Centre at 7:30 p.m. on August the 27th. The following day, at the same venue, will be a performance exploring the unique sounds of glassmaking through poetry and music called Fusion and Fluidity at 2:30 p.m.
Military personnel from the UK and US have coordinated a major exercise from a Scottish naval base, training battle staff for Britain's new aircraft carrier. They use HM Naval Base Clyde, known as Fastlane, as their headquarters to coordinate the joint US-UK exercise Saxon Warrior, involving a US carrier group and other vessels. More than 60 Royal Navy sailors and Royal Marines were on board the USS George H.W. Bush, honing their carrier strike skills ahead of the Royal Navy's new aircraft carrier HMS Queen Elizabeth's entry into service. The exercise staff provided challenges for the ships and staff at sea, together with scenarios to overcome. These range from defeating enemy forces in the air, on land, and on and under the sea, to rescuing drowned airmen and ensuring the freedom of merchant and pleasure craft to use the seas. Exercise Director Captain Andrew Stacey, RN, Captain JTEPS, said, "Exercise Saxon Warrior is an incredibly important and exciting step in the regeneration of the UK's carrier strike capability. for my team, Saxon Warrior represents the culmination of a long planning process and also marks the first step in a busy future of UK carrier strike group training. The task group comprised seven US, Norwegian and British ships, a US and Royal Navy submarine, and the carrier air wing of more than 90 aircraft and nearly 10,000 people. Exercise activity was centred around the scenario of a conflict between neighbouring countries, one supported by a multinational naval force and carrier strike group, the other by frigates, destroyers, submarines and a land-based aircraft. HMS Queen Elizabeth during sea trials off the coast of Scotland, meeting up with a task group of ships taking part in Exercise Saxon Warrior supporting aircraft, also simulated air raids, with 29 commando and Swedish tactical air controllers providing forward observation to ships and aircraft dropping ordnance on Cape Wrath in the far north of Scotland. The aim was to help train Commander UK Carrier Strike Group battle staff ahead of HMS Queen Elizabeth's arrival in Portsmouth later this year. As Scotland's only naval base, the Clyde is playing an increasingly important part in Royal Navy activity and has very much become the base of choice for our allies and partner nations.
A crooked care home manager who milked almost £20,000 from the bank accounts of a vulnerable resident has been jailed for 16 months. The case prompted a warning to those with relatives being looked after in similar circumstances to be on their guard. Paul Werrell Fellows siphoned cash from the savings of Brenda Rowlison for 2.5 years before admitting the racket. The 48-year-old had control of the finances of the woman, who was in her late 70s at the time, and had banked £161,612 from the sale of her house to fund her care, Wolverhampton Crown Court heard. The victim, who moved into Crossway's residential home, Highgate Road in Walsall, in March 2013, was never shown any statements by Werrell Fellows. She was mentally agile, but needed daily assistance physically, the court heard. He knew the PIN number to her bank card, which was kept in the safe in his office with other financial documents. Money spent or given to those living there should have been registered and countersigned for, but the record was neither complete nor accurate, disclosed the prosecutor, who described the security as woeful and lamentable. He concluded it was a shocking failure. Mr. Jasveer Mann, defending, said he and his then partner jointly led a lifestyle they could not afford. Initially, he took cash, but he managed to repay it before it was noticed that it was missing. Then he became emboldened and started taking money from her bank account and was not able to replace that. He started spending money frivolously on unnecessary items. He had free access to somebody else's money. He is now a broken man, having suffered an enormous fall from grace, and is thoroughly ashamed. Werrell Fellows, now of Ribble Road in Blackpool, admitted fraud by abuse of position between July 2014 and January 2017 and was jailed by recorder Anthony Lowe, who told him this was a blatant and wicked breach of trust. The general public should be put on notice. They should ensure the financial affairs of relatives in care homes are being properly monitored. Targeting someone because of their vulnerability makes a crime even more serious. So it is important that together we bring these people to justice, whether they be strangers, carers or family members.
Tougher sentences are called for over tool theft epidemic. It's a major problem. It's crippling people. Those are the words of angry carpenter Lee Watts, who has started a petition calling on tougher sentences for tool thefts. Lee believes there is an epidemic in the country where traders are being targeted by thieves and their livelihoods are being ruined. The 43-year-old from West Bromwich, who has been a victim of tool theft himself, said, "There is an epidemic which is taking place across the country. We have got a major problem and it's crippling people. Thieves are targeting work vans and peeling doors off. They're stealing tools and damaging livelihoods. It's affecting families as well. These people are committing crimes. Mr. Watts, who runs his own company called Concept Interiors, said he is determined to get a strong petition together. He said, "I have been targeted myself and had tools stolen. I know how difficult that is to recover from a business. We just don't get enough help. I don't blame the police. I think the courts need to take more action and give out stronger sentences to these people. These aren't petty crimes. This is a big thing, and these thefts are organised in groups. I'm going to get a strong petition together and at the very least raise awareness of how serious this problem is." Lee's petition states, "Our government must look strongly into the growing problem of tool theft from vans and must impose more tougher penalties on those convicted of these crimes." Not only that, but I'll also be looking for our government to put stricter guidelines and laws in place for selling second-hand tools.
A teenager appeared in court charged with murdering a former Stourbridge youth team footballer who was stabbed in a nightclub. Ryan Passy, 24, suffered a wound to the chest and died in hospital after he was attacked in Chicago's in the early hours of Sunday. Relatives have paid tribute to ex-Stourbridge FC youth player Mr. Passy from Briley Hill, describing him as a friend to everyone. Cobe Murray, 19, appeared at Birmingham Crown Court via video link, charged with Ryan's murder. Wearing a maroon sweater, he spoke only to confirm his name and that he understood the proceedings. As he spoke over the link from Her Majesty's Youth Offenders Institute, Binsford, and responded yes, sir, to each question, members of Mr. Passy's family watched from the public gallery. Murray of the Broadway in Dudley was told by the judge that he would appear for a plea hearing at the court on September the 5th. A provisional two-week trial was also set for January the 24th next year. Judge Philip Parker, QC, told Murray he would be remanded into custody until the next hearing. Dudley Council Cabinet member Karen Shakespeare said, "Following the incident, the police requested the council carry out an interim review of the licence. The committee met on Wednesday, the 9th of August, and the licence has been suspended, pending a formal review on August the 24th. West Midlands Police are continuing to appeal for witnesses to the attack. Chairman of the Licensing Committee, Councillor Michael Evans, said, "We felt it was a very serious issue as the stabbing occurred inside the premises and that made it more concerning. The suspension will give the police and nightclub time to talk together." Stourbridge councillor Nicholas Barlow said, "I'm sure they will use that time to take stock of what has happened to try and look at how they can work together towards eliminating these types of incidents." In the light of the tragedy, the Rye Market Shopping Centre, where the club is based, cancelled a magic workshop which was planned for last Friday. A spokesperson for Chicago said, "We are all devastated and shocked by the tragic death of Ryan Passy last weekend in what appeared to be a totally unprovoked attack. We did everything possible to try to save him, as did the paramedics who were on the scene within minutes. We will continue to work with the police and do everything we can to ensure that the offenders are brought to justice."
It looks like something out of a horror film, but this is the interior of a well-known pub, which is soon to welcome a vicar to rid it of its ghostly spirits. New owners of the former Little Civic in Wolverhampton city centre have described how staff have witnessed ghostly goings-on in the cellar and tunnels under the property. Now they are looking to get a vicar in to expel the ghosts so that further transformation of the venue can continue. The venue is currently being transformed by the owners of the neighbouring Dog and Doublet, who use the same underground stores. Jack Webb, bar manager, said, "I've been here for a couple of years now, and so many members of staff have reported the same things happening. Myself, I was on a ladder down there and I heard someone call out, 'Mama.' It was such a weird moment because I definitely heard it, and yet no one was there." Sean Westwood said, "We've had a lot of builders in recently, and whenever they go down there, they say they feel a chill and a pressure on their chests in one of the very back rooms, the glass store. People say there's the spirit of a young woman, a little girl, and an angry middle-aged man down there. The cellar has a filled-in tunnel that used to go right under the city that I don't know the history of. We've had to chain the barrels and gas canisters up down there because they always get moved around. When our reporters visited the cellar, the propped open door closed behind us unexpectedly and there was a loud, unexplained bang, despite no one else being at work at the site at the time. Sean said, I think this type of thing comes with the territory with such an old building. We would like to find out more about its history, especially as we're looking to knock part of the cellar through to become part of the new venue. We don't want to disrupt anything that's down there, we just want to free it from whatever is going on, because bad vibes often lead to bad things. Hopefully it won't lead to any bad business.
A King Swinford dance teacher has been left devastated at having to move her school after more than 50 years at a village church, after a disagreement with the minister over safeguarding policies. Olga Gwynn has been running the Gwynn School of Stage and Ballet Dancing from King Swinford Methodist Church for 51 years. And she has delighted in seeing a host of her star pupils gain places at top dance schools and ballet companies over the years. But Mrs. Gwynn, who is still taking classes at the age of 80, says she was told by church officials that she could no longer run her school from the premises unless she had parents of the children or an appropriate adult supervisor to sit in with her while she teaches. She said, I was told unless parents and grandparents can sit in the room while you're teaching, I'm afraid you can't have these premises in September. But I don't want parents running around the room and talking while I'm teaching. I've never known it before. I was absolutely devastated. Reverend Peter Knight, who took over as minister at the Stream Road Church 12 months ago, said schools, social workers, many dance associations and other organisations dealing with children adhere to and promote the policy of having a minimum of two adults supervising youngsters to comply with the government and NSPCC safeguarding and health and safety guidelines. He said the church had tried to come up with a solution for Mrs. Gwynn to enable to continue running her classes there. And he added, the best way and most financial viable way would have been to have one of the parents of the children there. He said it had been a really difficult one for us and added, we really tried to help. We have tried to support her over the years to come up to the guidelines. We have to follow the standards. We really felt that now was the time to say it needs to be firmed up. The Reverend Knight continued, we offered to help her if she could find a volunteer, someone not related to her. We wanted to keep her in the church profile. It's not been an easy decision. It's one she has taken. She had to withdraw as she couldn't meet expectations. He said Mrs. Gwynn had been a really valued part of the church for many years, and there had been no concerns about her. But the Methodist Church safeguarding policy states there should always be a minimum of two adults present at any activity within the church. And he added, it's about health and safety. It's also the issue of creating a safe space for children. We're insured on the terms of the Methodist Church policy. If we act outside of the guidelines, it's not valid. Mrs. Gwynn has, however, been offered the use of Wordsley Community Centre once a week, so her classes will continue every Wednesday at the centre at the Green from Wednesday, September the 6th. Mrs. Gwynn, who has donated thousands of pounds to charities over the years from the proceeds of her shows, says, I want to thank them very much. I can continue my work now. The first thing we're going to do is dance for the pensioners at their luncheon club.
6 weeks of roadworks have commenced near Russell's Hall Hospital in Dudley. More than 700 metres of gas pipes will be repaired as part of the project run by Cadent in Hilderick Crescent and Starbridge Road, near Dudley's Russell's Hall Hospital. Chief said there will be a temporary lane closure in Stourbridge Road, meaning just one lane of traffic for vehicles travelling towards the busy Scots Green Island. Work started on Monday the 14th of August. The lane closure in Stourbridge Road is due to be removed before the end of the month. Cadent said the existing iron mains will be replaced with tough, durable plastic pipes that will last at least 80 years. The roadworks were described as vital and essential by Cadent. Stephen Murray, who heads up the firm's gas mains replacement programme in the West Midlands, said, "Our work is vital to keep energy flowing. This essential project is a significant investment to ensure that local people continue to enjoy safe and reliable gas supplies for cooking and heating. We appreciate this is a busy area and we have planned the project for the school summer holidays when traffic is usually lighter to help ensure that any disruption is reduced. We appreciate people's patience and cooperation while we do this work." Councillor Hilary Bills, the Labour Group spokesman for Environmental Services, said, "I hope people visiting the hospital will bear with us as the roads need to be repaired. If the council has decided the work needs to be done, then it will have to be done. The council doesn't spend money doing roads up for no good reason." Cadent said the scheme has been planned and arranged with Dudley Council. The project is part of Cadent's £65 million programme to renew 230 miles of gas pipes in the West Midlands this year, which will ensure gas suppliers continue to reach 2 million homes and businesses in the region.
An inquest has heard that a father of four was killed after he drove like a madman whilst more than two times the drink-drive limit and without his seatbelt on, crashing his car. James O'Brien sped along Stowlings Lane in Kings Winford on the way home from being seen drunk at the Horse and Jockey in Walheath. The 28-year-old landscape gardener overtook a vehicle on the 30-miles-per-hour limit single-lane carriageway and then soon afterwards turned left into Ham Lane on the way home to his address on Oak Lane nearby. But the manoeuvre caused his blue Renault Scenic to understeer, collide the kerb, tip onto the driver's side and rest up against a metal sign at the junction. Mr O'Brien, originally from Ireland and fondly known as Jimmy, was left hanging half out of the car, but his foot remained on the accelerator, causing the wheels to spin. Onlookers rushed to his aid, but he was declared dead at the scene when paramedics and police arrived. Giving evidence at Black Country Coroner's Court, Detective Sergeant Paul Hughes of West Midlands Police Collision Investigation Unit read out statements from witnesses who had seen Jimmy between 6 p.m. and the moment the crash happened at around 6:30 p.m. on May the 15th. One had described the Scenic overtaking another car at terrific speed, up to 60 miles per hour. His statement said the car appeared to be out of control and driven by a madman. Other witnesses said Jimmy was seen leaning out of his window and shouting aggressively at other motorists on Stallings Lane, while several people told the police he had collided slightly with another vehicle before driving off and ultimately crashing. Jimmy's alcohol level was around 200 milligrams per decilitre, according to a toxicology report. The legal limit is 80 milligrams per decilitre. The medical cause of death was recorded as traumatic asphyxia. Coroner Zafar Siddiqui concluded Jimmy died as a result of a road traffic collision down to driver error, saying it may have been affected by alcohol. He added, "It is a tragic set of circumstances," and he leaves behind his wife and children.
And with that final news item from Beth, we will now make way for this week's notices. So it's goodbye from Sue.
Goodbye from Beth.
And bye-bye from Margaret.
Goodbye, everyone.